When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Discourse, a short-form, one-on-one interview podcast with filmmakers, actors, and other film industry folks, brought to you by The Playlist and hosted by myself, Mike D'Angelo. Today is a special one for me, as you'll hear in the interview. I am welcoming someone near and dear to my heart and many others' hearts to the podcast, Mr. Cary Elwes. Cary has been gracing our screens since, you know, the late 70s or 80s. You know him as Wesley or the Dread Pirate Roberts from The Princess Bride. He was also in Glory, Days of Thunder, Robin Hood Men in Tights, Twister, Saw, Stranger Things, too many things to list, quite honestly. The guy has had one hell of a career and keeps churning out great work. He currently has three releases that he's promoting this month. He's in Netflix's Rebel Moon Parts 1 and 2, both of which are streaming now on Netflix. He's in The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which is currently in theaters. That's the Guy Ritchie movie. He's also in Paramount Plus's Sonic the Hedgehog spinoff series Knuckles, which premieres exclusively on Paramount Plus on April 26th. So yeah, Cary has been one busy guy, and we talk about all those projects. He has a very special connection to the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which I will let him explain, but the film itself is extremely fun and action-packed. It's directed by Guy Ritchie, like I said, and also stars Henry Cavill, Henry Golding, Isaac Gonzalez, Alan Ritchson. All of them do great work in the film, and it's just one of those crazy movies based on real events. During World War II, about the inception of the SOE, the Special Operations Executive, which also cleverly ties into the origins of James Bond, which I didn't know. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a fun action movie. If you enjoyed Guy Ritchie's The Man from U.N.C.L.E., the kind of light, fun, kinetic vibe that brought, this one very much is kind of a cousin to that. Knuckles, like I say in the interview, was highly anticipated by my kids, and it did not disappoint them whatsoever. They absolutely loved it. Cary looks to be having a blast in the role, but it's basically a road movie with Knuckles and Adam Pally's Wade Whipple character, and it's like if you dropped Sonic characters into Kingpin and made it PG. It's a lot of fun. Rebel Moon, I'll be honest with you guys, I haven't watched either part of Rebel Moon, but it's for good reason. I am basically just trying to hold out for the director's cuts, because all I've heard from people is that the current versions are kind of really obviously edited down and perhaps watered down quite a bit. So I'm happy to wait until the Snyder cuts drop. I don't always love Snyder's work, but I'd rather judge him based on, you know, his preferred cuts than anything else. Regardless, we do touch on them briefly in the interview. Before I shoot you over to our chat, I've got to tell you that The Discourse is a part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Playlist Podcast, Bingeworthy, Deep Focus, and more. We can be heard on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite shows. Be sure to subscribe and drop us a comment or a rating, as we do very much appreciate it. Or head on over to theplaylist.net for film and TV news, reviews, interviews, and more. Okay, for our listeners, again, Rebel Moon Parts 1 and 2 are streaming on Netflix now, with the director's cuts coming later this summer. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is in theaters now, and Knuckles hits Paramount Plus on Friday, April 26th. Here's my delightful chat with the wondrously talented gentleman, Cary Elwes. All right, Cary, Mike D'Angelo with The Playlist. How are you today?
Hi, Mike. I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm a big fan of your work. Like you. Many, Princess Bride holds a special place in my heart. It's also my wife's all-time favorite movie, so she was insane with jealousy that I got to speak with you today.
Well, please tell her thank you for me.
I will. She has an As You Wish tattoo, actually. So
for real?
She went hard. She believes in it.
Oh, wow. We have to meet her someday.
Exactly. I actually have an appointment to get one as well this weekend. So if I were talking next week,
kidding.
I'd be sharing it with you.
Yeah. Wow. Mike, I'm impressed. That's amazing. Thank you.
But you have to settle for the t-shirt. I have a t-shirt. So you have to represent. It's like you're wearing
That's
your jersey
great.
To game day,
That's
you know?
Great.
So at the playlist, we're big film buffs. I always like to start conversations out with kind of creating a playlist, which is like 3 to 5 film or TV recommendations that you have for our audience. And they can be like recent favorites that have been like close to your heart or all time favorites that kind of broke you open and made you fall in love with it. Anything you want to recommend.
Top of the list goes to Francis Coppola. I saw Apocalypse Now when it came out in theaters, actually at the Cinerama Dome here in Hollywood, the original Cinerama Dome. And it was such an early print, it had no titles. And they handed out little black pamphlets to the audience members, of which I still have a copy. And I was so overwhelmed by the film, I just fell in love with it. I'd obviously been a big fan of Godfather, Conversation, all of his work. But this one, for me, was the one that really changed me in terms of my appreciation of filmmaking as a whole. Another one is Papillon with Steve McQueen, Dustin Hoffman. Extraordinary film. I saw that when I was a kid. Another one is The Third Man, starring Orson Welles, directed by Carol Reed. Again, saw it as a kid at a very formative age. What else? François Truffaut. Big fan of François Truffaut.
Just anything François.
I love François. Well, two films in particular. One is called Finally Sunday. It's a black and white film noir. Do you know it?
I do.
Really? Oh, cool. Yeah.
I went to film school, so a lot of these I got to experience in class and like study them.
Right on. So that, and then Battle of Algiers by Gillo Pontecorvo, which is groundbreaking in that it feels like a documentary and it's really a film. Yeah.
Amazing. Excellent choices. You have a lot of stuff coming out in a short amount of time here. Let's start out by talking Guy Ritchie's latest collaboration with you, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which is so fun. Like, I was blown away by how much fun this movie is. So, yeah, congratulations on it. It's so good.
Thank you.
Yeah. I heard this one came about because you were on Operation Fortune and have this familial connection that, you know, brings you to the table more or less. So was it just like him hearing that your grandfather worked?
That's correct.
One of the characters, the character you play, right?
That my grandfather on my mother's side worked for the character I play in the film. And I was in Turkey with Guy and I asked him what his next project was going to be. And he said, oh, you wouldn't know about it. It's a very obscure story about Special Operations Executive, one of the first missions they did. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, my grandfather was in Special Operations Executive. And so I told him right then and there, you have to put me in the film.
Yeah, amazing. And that was that. That's it.
That was that.
Nice. So how much did you, like, I have to imagine when you get a role that's so connected to your family history, it feels different. You engage with it differently. Did you kind of want to dive in more and research?
100%. 100%. Yeah. I was very lucky in that. Let's see. There have been some books written about my grandfather. I don't know if I had it right here, right now, but been a couple of books about my grandfather, plenty of books about Gubbins, plenty of books about SOE. I went to the Imperial War Museum and found Gubbins' diaries. And so because the original Special Operations Executive headquarters were burnt down after the war, not much material was left. But thankfully, there have been lots of writers who've told the story of Special Operations, not least of whom is Damian Lewis, whose book this film is based on.
So do you come to this information after your grandfather has passed, or do you come to this information and kind of try to pick his brain about it?
Well, I'm an amateur historian myself.
Sure.
And I was actually compiling a whole history of Special Operations Executive myself, just for fun, just to delve into his life more. Like I said, there was a book written by Zan Fielding, I can't find it right now, about my grandfather. So I was already into it when I met Guy. So it was sort of coincidence. I don't know, maybe it was fate, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The other happy surprise is that this whole thing is tied in with like the James Bond universe in a weird way. that Ian right. Fleming is a character and M right. is based on your character. It's just crazy.
It's as crazy.
As an Englishman, what's more special? Is it the family connection to the story or the James Bond connection?
Oh, the family, of course.
Of course.
You know, anything related to one's own family is deeply personal. So I felt enormous responsibility to get it right. My grandfather was kind of secretive, but I used to pick his brain. He was my real life hero growing up.
Of course.
So I used to pick his brain about all his exploits. You know, he was dropped into Albania in 1943 behind enemy lines to create a fifth column and blow up bridges and railways and kill Germans. And so his exploits were very similar to the characters in this film and this mission, actually.
Almost like you could make a sequel to with your grandfather.
I know,
as a
right?
character.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. You've been in a bunch of different action films recently, whether it's the Mission Impossible one, Rebel Moon you've got, but you tend to be like the boss or the guy in the suit who's playing more of the political game. Do you prefer it that way at this point in your career? Or do you have a desire to like be Liam Neeson for a minute and, you know, kick some ass?
You know, I'm grateful for the roles I get. I get a chance to pick them and I pick them carefully. Yeah, Guy Ritchie, it just so happens that in both Operation Fortune and this one, I'm the guy who sends everyone on the mission. And so that put the dink in Coinky Dink a little bit. But I obviously love working with Zack Snyder. I did that part really as a favor to him because we're friends. And nice. I think he's a wonderful filmmaker. And then I have this other show on Paramount Plus called Knuckles.
Yes,
which
I've
is a spinoff
it.
Of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
And the character was so wonderfully ridiculous that I couldn't say no, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that because my boys are 5 and 7. They love the Sonic the Hedgehog movies.
That's great.
Yeah,
they love Sonic and Knuckles, I bet.
Love it. So as soon as they saw the trailer for Knuckles, they were like highly anticipating this. I got the episodes early and we binged through them all and they loved it. And I didn't even know that you were popping up in it. And then when you did, I was like, of course. And he's having the most fun ever with this over the top British bowler. How quick of a yes is that when they're just like teacup bowling ball, you know?
Oh, it was instant. You know, when they showed me what the designs for his costume, his over-the-top costume, and it was described to me as Wayne Newton on acid, I said, this is it. We're doing it. You know, he had this fabulous cape that was based on a British flag and top hat. And they designed this great mustache and goatee for the character. I was in right away.
Yeah, I described it as almost kind of the British version of Bill Murray in Kingpin, where he's just
exactly
for it.
Yeah, we studied Kingpin quite a lot, actually, myself, and they put me together with two brilliant bowlers. Thank God, I only had a week's training, but these two guys, that Paramount got me, Rob Thurby, mm-hmm. he's a world champion bowler. You know, he's won numerous gold, silver, and bronze medals for Team England. Another guy called Jack Trent, who owns Bowling Vision and distributes Brunswick in the UK, and he's equally brilliant. And the two of them, I mean, thank God, I was training every single day, all day, until my arms couldn't lift another ball. And because I you know, the director, Carol Banker, wanted me to bowl strikes for real. They didn't want to have any CGI. So, it was a challenge. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you have to remind them you can, you know, cut and edit to a strike being thrown. But that's awesome that you committed that. Yeah. I know you do that in general. Like I heard, what was it, Days of Thunder? You got really into like the racing of it all, didn't you?
Oh my God. You know, I got to, I was taught how to race NASCAR by Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, you can't imagine the thrill of, and Kyle Petty. I mean, you know, when the filmmakers told me, oh, you're going to have to go train NASCAR on the track, going about 180 miles an hour and operate the cameras at the same time.
Oh, damn.
I was like, where do I sign on? Let's go. So, yeah.
It is a little bit like Top Gun in that way, because he made his actors do that as well.
Yeah.
I would be slapped across the face by both myself and my wife if I didn't bring up The Princess Bride, a role that's followed you everywhere you go, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We've read the book. I actually got a signed copy that you put up on the site. You clearly fondly remember that experience and had a great time making that movie. Has it always been that way? Or was there a time where you kind of didn't look back at it so fondly? Or did you always have this like great memory of it?
Well, first of all, it was such a joyful experience, so I can't possibly look at it in a negative way in that regard. Also, it's provided me with the career and life I have today. So, you know, you're lucky as an actor to have any of your work resonate with the public. And with that one, I struck gold. And, you know, I'll be eternally grateful for that experience, you know?
Yeah. How long did it take for you to really understand the kind of following that it had? Because it took a bit. It was a cult classic.
It didn't really become a successful movie until it went out on VHS a year after it was disappeared very quickly in the movie theaters.
That's how I had it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Everybody really found the movie in Ancillary, which is an extraordinary thing, which, as I heard, is what happened to Wizard of Oz. Not to compare it to that film, but The Wizard of Oz was not a success in movie theaters, and people really began to love it when it screened every Christmas on television.
Yeah, you have multiple ones that I just, like, my childhood was filled with watching these movies.
The
Princess Bride, obviously. Days of Thunder. Twister is a huge one for me. And Robin Hood Men in Tights they were all on heavy rotation in my house.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah, I look back at those. I revisit those quite often. And that's why it was so great to see you revisiting kind of the wacky side of things with Knuckles. Is I went, man, I got to rewatch Robin Hood Men in Tights again and maybe make my voice.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
So I have to ask about that. How was the Mel Brooks experience at that point in your career?
Well, you know, I grew up watching Mel Brooks movies like everyone. You know, let's see, where do I start? One of the first screenings of Princess Bride was on the Fox lot, and there were some interesting guests that came that day. Rob Reiner was obviously there, but Rob invited his father, Carl, and Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder. And I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather. When they came out after the screening and each of them told me how wonderful I was in the film, I was speechless. And so thanks to that film, Mel called me, you know, some years later and said, let's make Robin Hood again. In fact, when he called me at home, I thought it was a prank call. He goes, this is Mel Brooks. I went, yeah, right. And I hung up. And he called back and he said, don't hang up. It's me. So, yeah, I was so excited to work with him. I'd been a huge fan. And we had, again, such a joyful time working together.
Yeah, that one looks like it might have been a real experience for everybody involved. I love that movie so much. And it's crazy to see, you know, some of the people that were in it. Now, like, you look back and Dave Chappelle's in there and you're just
Dave,
like,
we discovered Dave. He was a stand-up comedian. Mel was very kind and let me be in on all the casting decisions because he wanted to make sure we all had chemistry. And when Dave came in to read, it was like, we looked at each other, we're like, that's it. We don't need to see anything else. That's it. You know? And of course, Richard Lewis, who we recently lost, who was just a gem of a man, a brilliant, brilliant comedian.
The moving mole.
Yes, great. Which goes back to Young Frankenstein and the hump, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Yeah, you've been in so many classics, you know, the Princess Bride, Glory, Days of Thunder, you know, all the ones I've listed, Liar, Liar, Saw, Stranger Things, Mission Impossible. There's too many to list. In this kind of age of IP and sequels, do you have any characters where you like, you know, I would like to play this one again, even if it's one that people wouldn't necessarily think?
Sequels are a hard thing, Mike, because if you look at the history of sequels, there are only a handful. You can probably count them on one hand that have been successful or memorable, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's tricky. It's tricky doing sequels because except for like someone like, you know, when you have an IP like Mission Impossible with Tom and McHugh, Chris McQuarrie just find ways to reinvent the story every time they do it. It's very hard. It's very hard to do. And I wouldn't want to sort of revisit any of the roles I've done unless it was something like Ministry. If Guy wanted to do another mission, obviously I would sign on for that. You know, when it's something like that, I would definitely consider it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it feels like there are more missions to go, you know?
Well, there are many missions.
Probably scratches
so many.
Yeah.
You know, so there's plenty to go on. Yeah.
Man, that's nuts to think about. The whole Mission Impossible of it all. Like, did you get the call from Tom himself? Because you guys worked together on Days of Thunder.
I got the call from McHugh. And then he said, but Tom really wants you and I really want you. And how soon can you get here? Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Was there ever, do I have to die? Like, maybe I come back for the next one.
I know. They're so funny. I heard that a lot from Van. You know, I think it was a case of like, they wanted to have that shock value, like Janet Leigh dying in the first 10 minutes of Psycho. Mm-hmm. I think they thought the fans would think there was no way they were going to kill Cary Elwes. And of course, mm-hmm. they did.
Bastards. Okay, so what's coming up in the Cary Elwes world? What kind of projects do you have on the horizon?
I'm doing a film in June called The Panic, which is based on a true story, but it's sort of under wraps right now, so I can't talk too much about it. But
fair enough.
Yeah, we're going to be shooting that in Buffalo in June, and I'm with a wonderful cast. It's Donald Sutherland and Bruce Dern and Malcolm McDowell, so I'm very excited about that.
Nice.
It's a period piece set in New York at the turn of the century. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. And since I do have a minute left with you, I will ask one favor is if you could regale us with maybe your favorites, Andre the Giant story.
Oh, Andre. Andre will always be in my heart. Andre was, his heart was as big as he was. He really had a gentle giant. He had a beautiful heart filled with empathy and love. You know, ironic for a guy whose profession was throwing people around in the ring.
I know.
That was all an act. He was not a violent person by nature at all. But he loved to play tricks. He loved to play pranks on people. I remember he pulled out his wallet. It was before cell phones, obviously. And he took out all these old creased black and white photographs from his life in France. And he showed them to me. And one of them was him being discovered after by a wrestling impresario. And it's him throwing an armoire with one hand at the back of a moving van. And of course, being 7'4", this wrestling impresario went, that guy. And then the second one was of him in the south of France on the beach with his arms outstretched. And you've got, I don't know, four women sitting on each shoulder. And he said to me, yeah, that's when I became popular. And then the third one was of him in Paris, dressed in a suit and tie. And it's him leaning against a lamppost, laughing. And I said, what's that about? And he said, oh, well, I used to play pranks on my friends. I would take them to the bar. And then I'd excuse myself to go to the bathroom. I'd go outside and I'd move all their cars behind lampposts so they couldn't drive away. And then he'd wait for them to come out. And then he'd just crack up laughing. Yeah. Great guy. Really extraordinary.
That's amazing stuff. I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure, Mike.
Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is in theaters now. It's so much fun.
Yes.
Rebel Moon Parts 1 and 2 are on Netflix. Knuckles premieres April 26th. You are a busy man, and it's a good time to be a Cary Elwes fan. So thanks for the time.
Thank you so much, Mike. That means a lot. Thank you so much.